The United States of America faces an epidemic of youth crime. Young teenage gangs now begin to terrorize large cities. Sensational articles in newspapers and national magazines highlight the fact that there are more murders now in that age group than any other in the United States. Suddenly, crime is in the news again. Not that it hasn't been all along, but apparently Watergate, a lot of the energy crisis, foreign considerations, and others have kept crime pretty much buried on the second or third page of the big city newspapers. But now, once again, police departments, the FBI, and correctional institutions are really concerned about the growing wave of crime among juveniles. Well, why? What causes it? Criminals are made, not born. It all begins in the home. Child rearing, child discipline, what the teens themselves say about the family structure, about discipline, about parental example is where it's at. Time and again, I have said, at the root cause of teenage and child crime is America's frayed, disrupted home structures. Today, the United States leads the world in divorce. At least one out of three homes in the big city areas, the divorces are just about keeping pace with the marriage licenses. We are, in many areas, a matriarchal society. What I'm about to tell you in this program has basically to do with input from young people about the best way to rear children in a normally stable home, that is, where both parents are present. In future programs, I'll take up the subject of those millions upon millions of condominiums and apartments and other city residences where tens and hundreds of thousands of American mothers live and from which they go to work, trying to support young children, where most of our waitresses, it seems, and the servant type jobs available, and that may mean more than just menial tasks. You can go on up into the female white-collar worker. What is the word for that in our society today? At any rate, even executives and stenographers and business and social workers and so on, where you'll find an enormous number of them are divorcees supporting children. So that, in one sense of the word, is not what I'm talking about this first program, but even there, what the kids say themselves about how to properly rear a young person is very important to you, whether you are a divorcee with young children to support, whether you're a grandmother, whether you're an unmarried person, or one of the kids themselves. In a moment, then, the seven major points that young people themselves by the hundreds have told social workers they feel is the way they ought to be brought up. The sharpest person you're liable to run across is someone you created and produced yourself. There's just no kidding about that. When you give birth to a child, when you as a parent, whether married or unmarried, and as we know, the eternal knows, there are too many of the latter part or the latter kind today, you still have a pretty smart, pretty intelligent little person coming along who is going to develop about 3/4 or more of his brain capacity during the first 3 years of his life. It's going to give you every reason for joy and happiness and excitement and enthusiasm and expectancy, the fulfillments, the rewards in life, and also some of your greatest fears and apprehensions, some of your deepest worries, nervous fits, night sweats, bizarre nightmares and dreams, terrible fears of evil consequences, and unfortunately, in some few cases from time to time, children who even turn on their own parents and end up killing them. Young people in our society are being abandoned by the tens of millions. They're being abandoned right on their living room floors to a medium that we're looking at and talking through right now called television, that in the early 50s and on into the 60s began to become a kind of a one-eyed monster because of the millions of young people who sat hunched in strange and grotesque postures before all of the kiddies' cartoon sessions, which have become a great amount of importance in the news of recent years because of FCC surveys and private surveys and complaints by parents and teachers and other organizations about violence and child crime, the cartoons and all of the many, many accounts of how kids would become more violent and more prone to commit a violent crime because of mimicking or imitating something they saw on television. It's easy to abandon a child in your own living room. to abandon a child in your own home, and even where mother and father are both present. Millions of young kids are being abandoned. They're being brought up willy-nilly with no actual training program. Now, let me draw a couple of analogies before I show you what the kids themselves begin to tell social workers. These are kids who have been troubled, young lawbreakers who have been in jail or at least in juvenile court, and that nearly never means that they've been to jail. And what they have collectively told us, told all others as parents, what they feel the parents ought to be doing. But first, let me draw an analogy. There are any number of analogies we could draw about kids-to-parent relationships, but it is so easy for you to get involved in some moment of your life in 30s or 40s where you're going to go about the business of slimming your waist down. You're going to get on a crash diet. You're going to take up a new hobby. You're going to go into painting. You want to travel. I mean, as parents and as older people, you know, getting up into our 30s and 40s, there are different phases in life, different things we take up as an interest. Now, if you look at many a parent that may have youngsters sitting right there on the floor, youngsters playing in the bedroom, going in and out of the house, back and forth to school, to the playground, sitting there and watching television, you might, like as not, find a person who is diligently spending a great deal of time studying diet, exercise, sending off for one of the sauna belt type of things, taking weight-reducing exercises, going faithfully down to the local gym, maybe jogging a mile every morning on a Weight Watchers crash diet. We'll go out to lunch with the guys or the gals and have a couple of martinis and then sit there and order just a half a salad with no dressing, a little bit of Parmesan cheese on it or something. Maybe ask for the Weight Watchers with a little dab of cottage cheese and a slice of tomato and some lean meat. Diligently going about the business of looking out for themselves, worried about their waistline at the beach, worried about the way they look to the other people, and maybe in the case of a man trying to get ahead in his job, and so he wants to look right to the boss and have the energy and the mental alertness that goes with good health. Isn't it a little strange that we see millions of adults pummeling their bodies, going to exercise rooms and gymnasiums, taking crash diet courses, and at the very same time, often as not, abandoning their own life's blood, their own flesh and blood, their own children, just practically anything that comes along. A lot of people are far more concerned about their own personal programs than they are about their children. Well, the basic raw material of any nation that is its most precious and its most important, that ranks way ahead of its energy resources, its precious metals, its minerals, even its farmland, are, believe it or not, its youth. And when a great nation, two great nations to which I speak, the United States and Canada, are abandoning their most precious national resource to entertainment, to the whims of parents, to simple apathy or lethargy, or to lack of information or education about what is a child, how should a child best be reared and trained? You know that some of the child psychologists now are beginning to do a 180? That's right, they are. They're beginning to turn around and say they were wrong back there in the 50s when so much came out on child psychology, when even education reacted with a new kind of permissiveness and what they called progressive education. And they said, oh, don't stifle these kids if they're playing in anything. You know, you could even get a little bizarre and talk about some of the things kids want to play in. Say, look, don't disturb that kid. He's making interesting little patterns in that because someday he's liable to be an Einstein. He's liable to be another famous artist or a great literalist or a musician or a great military, perish the thought, or maybe political, perish the double thought, a leader of some kind. So you don't stifle him. You don't say, hey, don't play in that stuff. That's rotten. Get your hands out of that, you little so-and-so, and whack him a couple of times, because this is liable to pervert the kid. It's liable to bring about all kinds of terrible consequences. He's probably going to suck both thumbs at once. He's going to become a bedwetter. Terrible things can happen if you use any kind of discipline. I have not talked to Dr. Spock, but I understand that after these many, many years of having put out a great deal of information about the more permissive type of child rearing, the use of psychology on children, that even Dr. Spock has begun to say that maybe he was in error a little bit and that he should not have taught it quite that way. And I understand has begun to embrace the idea that discipline under certain constraints and conditions might not be all that wrong. Now, I can't quote Dr. Spock. I've never talked to him, though I have read a great deal of some of the earlier information he put out. And I have written a book, which was a part of a master's thesis on the subject of child psychology and child rearing, which I did back in my college years. in response, partly, to that extreme that began to be virtually enforced, I feel, upon the American public back in the 50s and on into the 60s, of permissiveness, and when the schools seemed to go along with the idea of no discipline. But now they're beginning to decide that discipline would have been better all along. Well, you need to make up your own mind, but you need to write for some of the literature we have on the subject, so take 1 minute and watch this.
Is being a parent is a full-time job.
Parents need to help their children reach their full potential. You can give your children a solid foundation in citizenship, morality, work habits, and personality by using the principles of child rearing found in the pages of your Bible. These guidelines are fully explained in The Plain Truth About Child Rearing. For your free copy, dial direct 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444.
We sure have a good mommy and daddy, huh, Zipper?
That booklet I wrote myself, this is it. You can see the thickness of it, about the size of half a Reader's Digest, and yet it really is a boiled-down synopsis, as it were, a short form of the literature, the material that I earlier compiled together, including a lot of some of the most mind-bending quotations you will ever read in all of your life out of some of the books available in public libraries on the subject of child-rearing. And it's free of charge, there's no price, so if you haven't yet jotted down that toll-free telephone number that you saw on the television screen, I hope that at the next time we give you a brief time out or something, you'll grab a pen or a pencil and jot it down before you leave the television set, and then just dial. It just takes a moment between commercials, and that's usually 3 to 5 minutes when you're changing, you know, between programs on a station break, or do it later. But, you know, if you can, don't put it off, because that booklet is absolutely priceless and invaluable, and yet there is no price tag on it. Well, I want to tell you some of the lessons that have been learned by social workers who have gone about the business of gathering statistical and documented evidence from youthful offenders who have been involved in child crime. They wanted to know, when did you first go off the track? Why are you here in trouble with the law? Why did you steal? Why did you commit larceny or arson or burglary? Why did you beat up this little old lady and take her purse? Why did you do this and that? So in Ontario, Canada, at a correctional center, a social worker developed a very close rapport with quite a large number of these young people in trying to help them straighten out their lives. Now, the kids tell it sometimes in involved language, but as many as I can get across in this one program, and then to complete the next couple of programs, I want to tell you what they themselves said in the 7 major points they gave to parents about what they wish had been done in their lives. So this comes from many, many young people examining their own childhood, the problems in their own family structure, and what they had to say about it. The very first thing these youngsters say to parents is, one, keep cool. Don't lose your temper in the crunch. Keep the lid on when things go wrong. Kids need the reassurance that comes from controlled responses. Now, parents are assumed to be grown-ups, but don't kid yourself. There are millions upon millions of parents that have never grown up emotionally. We first grow up physically. As I said, somewhere around 2/3 to 3/4 of our brain, not capacity for education, understanding, or knowledge, but at least the capacity of the brain of the cranium itself, are developed by about the first 3 years. And if that is indicative in the amount of development that goes on in the preschool years, then perhaps it should be a lesson to us. We grow up first physically. We gradually develop our motor facility and our coordination. Some people never do. Eventually, we grow up mentally in the sense that we are educated. But many people never, never grow up emotionally. And if some people do grow up emotionally, many others who might be emotionally stable and mature never really develop spiritually. There are many ways in which we grow up and develop. But there are millions upon millions of parents that are down in their teens, to whom the responsibility, and that's a terrible sounding word to a lot of people, of child rearing, of the caring for a child, even as simple expediencies of food, clothing, and shelter, have never been learned either by parental example themselves, if they themselves came from a broken home, and have a child unwanted, unplanned for, and unexpected, and perhaps even out of wedlock, which unfortunately is happening by the tens and hundreds of thousands of cases every year, even in spite of abortion laws and the like. And so you have here a situation where there are millions upon millions of parents who themselves are not emotionally mature. And the kids say, as if with one voice, the one thing that is so essential in rearing a child is emotional stability. The coolness of mind and temper in a crisis, an emergency, whether it's anything from a spilled cereal bowl to a broken goldfish bowl to a strangled canary. Perish the thought. But the things that blow parents' minds so they lose control over their emotions. Now, this booklet on the plain truth about child rearing examines the mythical phases of childhood, the stages of development that many people imagine these young kids go through. Now, are there stages of physical development? Of course. There's a time when they crawl and not walk, a time when they pull up and are not yet walking or toddling, a time when they're beginning to walk and do so rather awkwardly. There are definite development stages in the sense of awareness and abilities in doing new and different things and getting into more and more potential danger or trouble. So the booklet doesn't take issue with whether or not there are stages of development. But there is one way of observing, as it were, from arm's length through the type of glass that they put these kids in, a playpen type of environment. They got double glass, the kind that the kids cannot see through and looks like a mirror, but the observers are watching. They observe how these young people grow up and develop, take careful notes, draw analogies out of the animal kingdom, such as orangutans and gorillas and chimpanzees and how they care for their young, or birds or alligators or lizards or what have you, and then begin to apply that to child rearing. But there's one thing the kids say, that the parents are the foundation of the family, that when they, the kids, make a mistake, when they rebel, they break something, they don't get in on it, whatever it is, a lot of parents simply blow their minds. And so many sensational cases of child beating, which can even be crimes in themselves, which brought about the swinging of the pendulum to the opposite extreme of a belief in no discipline. Many cases of child beating have been sensationalized in the press, and well, they should be. If a child has been either murdered, which has happened, seriously injured for life, which has happened, injured at all, which has happened. And so, of course, people go to the opposite extreme and say, since an emotionally unstable, immature parent blew his mind, lost his temper, and beat a child within an inch of his life, all child discipline with a normal, mature, loving, forgiving parent in a stable home administering right discipline is wrong. That's an extreme. The booklet does not go to that extreme at all. And the kids themselves say, keep the lid on when things go wrong. Kids need the reassurance that comes from controlled responses. There's a biblical scripture that pretty much paraphrases that over in Proverbs 25 and verse 28 that says, a man without self-control is as defenseless as a city with broken down walls. That comes from the Living Bible. And so children learn most from parental example. If parents themselves descend to a kid's level by losing their mind over some problem and beating on the kid, how in the world can they ever correct or discipline a child who, in a frenzy of anger over some of the kid kicking him or spitting on him or taking his toy, lashes out and hurts somebody? It's pretty tough for them to do so. The second major point they said, rather lengthy the way they put it, but worthwhile of discussion, is don't get strung out from too much booze or too many pills. Interesting, isn't it, that the kids put that as number two? It's because of the fantastic parental example, the multiple millions of parents who are hitting the booze too hard, whose medicine cabinets look like a little corner of the drugstore, who are popping every kind of pill and yet trying to keep these kids off drugs and the like. The kid said, when we see our parents reaching for these crutches, we get the idea that nobody goes out there alone, that it's perfectly okay to go for a bottle or a capsule when things get heavy. Remember, your children are great imitators, the kid said. And we lose respect for parents who tell us to behave one way while they behave the other way. You might think you can tell a child, don't do as I do as I say do, but you can't. You can't get away with it. Because the very easiest way these children are going to learn is by looking at parental example. It's the greatest possible teacher there is. We've got another book that I'd like to talk to you about for about 1 minute and then come back and take up the third point and discuss this one a little bit. And that has to do with this fantastic increase in crime.
Charlie Taylor thought they were delivering a new TV set. I put new locks on the doors.
And we weren't gone for very long.
Why, they came in broad daylight.
I didn't think we had that many things worth stealing.
We've got lots of reasons why a crime couldn't happen to us, but it can and does. This informative free booklet, Crime Can Be Stopped, gives you valuable ways to help protect your home. Dial direct 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444. Remember, no one is immune to crime.
And they deserved exactly what they got. I think every burglar ought to come out and find not only his car tires gone or his truck gone, or his tires gone rather, but the truck itself. That would even be funnier. But at any rate, crime is skyrocketing out of all proportion to population. Recent sensational allegations resulting from studies made by those who have taken surveys have intimated very strongly that the FBI uniform reports, which after all really are only a compilation of voluntary statistics given by police departments in big cities, which the FBI then publishes, that they may be somewhat in error because a great deal of the kind of crime with which we're all almost in a day-to-day sense familiar, of malicious mischief, of vandalism, of destruction of property, from youths, goes unreported. Oftentimes, a bike is bent out of shape, bicycles are stolen, never reported. Most people are going to report the loss of an automobile or something serious like arson or something like this, but many tens of thousands of Americans and Canadians never report the loss of theft of property. A store owner that just has a constant week after week attrition of vegetables or candies or goodies and almost never reports it. This is commonly known. So child crime is rising by leaps and bounds, and at the very root of it is a causal factor. And that cause gets right back down to the home and the way children are reared and taught and trained and educated in the very first place. Now for the moment, as we go through these points that many, many children, young people, teenagers, have told social workers they feel parents should be aware of, we are talking about the ideal situation of a home where a father and a mother are present. Unfortunately, somewhere around a quarter to a third of all society doesn't have it that way, and even those homes where both are present are not necessarily happy homes, and the seeds of divorce may already have been sown. And so for the time being, I'm just talking about the idea that there are two parents there. Later on, we'll take up exceptions to this, which also, by the way, the booklet on child rearing does go into, at least in part. The second thing they said was this idea of booze and pills, the idea that parents have to have some kind of a crutch to lean on, that kids are great imitators, are going to lose respect for parents that tell them to behave one way while they behave another. Proverbs 22 and verse 6 is another scriptural paraphrase of that. It says, train up a child in the way that he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. That's a guarantee. Oh, there may be lapses in teenage. There may be these phases or problems. There may be problem children that sometimes stray away rather dramatically from what their parents would like them to do. But there is a law there that in a stable home, a child who is reared in the way he should go by parents who will abide by these laws and these rules. And these are really scriptural principles, and that's what's so interesting about it, because we're going to the other end. I'm not sitting here and telling you like an educator, a philosopher, or a religionist, the Bible says, and then giving you a scripture to tell you how to rear your kids. What I'm doing is paraphrasing back for you what comes from young people who themselves have gone the wrong way and are picking back through their past lives trying to tell a social worker how it all got started, why they went the wrong way, what was the causal factor. How do they wish their parents had reared and trained them? What would have been the ideal situation according to them? So it does say to train up a child in the way that he should go, yes, but I'm giving it to you, you know, from the grassroots point of view. So basically, the better adjusted And the more balanced and the better the example of the parents themselves, then the more the chances for a well-adjusted, obedient child. And it's just like saying the analogy of a factory. The mold is there, whether you're talking about the Ford plant at Ypsilanti or whether you're talking about some other automobile maybe manufactured inside of Canada, because the mold is what produces that shape and that form, and you can't beat that factory, because parents and homes are kid factories. And the kid is the product, and the youngster that comes out of that, if he's surly and rebellious and like to go over and throttle your chicken, or dent or kick in your automobile, or walk up to you and spit in your eye, this kind of a kid is a product. And if you would go and find out what his total home environment is like, what kind of a parent he has, father and mother, what the economic structure is, what the socioeconomic or the racial structure is, and race, believe it or not, has a lot to do with it, as I'll talk about later, because of the fact of class distinctions, of the socioeconomic fallout from racial distinctions, and sometimes deliberate racial distinctions that are made in society, which basically force the black American home to become a matriarchy over a period of many, many decades, resulting in a higher incidence of child crime for that particular race, not because that is a proclivity of the race, but because it is a socioeconomic fallout from a racist background of parents of ours going back generations who cast that die long ago and is just now beginning to be overcome as a broader black middle class emerges in American society. And you see the structure of a father figure in the black home, and that is what is so needed, whether it's black or white or Jewish or Oriental or Puerto Rican or what you're talking about. The third major thing the kid said is, don't blow your class. Keep the dignity of parenthood. Stay on that pedestal. Your children have put you there because they need someone to look up to. They said, don't try to dress, dance, or talk like your kids. You embarrass us and you look ridiculous. Now, in that ad, you saw a parent down on the floor with his kid. That's all well and good when the kid is so tiny you want to put him on your stomach or bounce him in the air and get him to gurgle, and maybe if you're not careful, spit on you without meaning to. But when he becomes 15, 16, or 18, don't get down on the floor with him anymore. I'm talking about the level of your responses to him. You don't need to wear your hair like he does, dress like he does, use the slang he does. He isn't going to respect you for it. The kids say by the hundreds, you embarrass us and you look ridiculous. Well, I'll take it up there next time. I think there's a great deal more needs to be said about some of these things that the kids themselves try to tell us as parents they wish we had been doing while they were growing up. If you write for these twin booklets on Crime Can Be Stopped, Here's How, and the booklet on the plain truth about child rearing, you will have a great deal to think about. And it's absolutely free of charge. The toll-free number you saw, it'll be repeated again, or the mailing address. Until next time, Garner Ted Armstrong. Goodbye, friends.
You have seen Garner Ted Armstrong. For literature offered on this program, send your request to Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, 91123. Canadian viewers write Box 44, Vancouver, BC. Or in the continental United States, you may dial this toll-free number, 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444.